on KLYT. This is ABQ Connect.
Hey, before I jumped into my first segment, I called your attention to the Action Center at KLYT.FM. There's another resource there I want to make sure you have. Parents, the kids are back to school for the most part, right? Well, Focus on the Family put together a download for you. Free downloadable resources for parents preparing for that new school year, even in the midst of it happening now. Practical guidance for navigating school topics and conversations with your kids, parenting tools designed to help families approach the school year with confidence. Think of all the things we've talked about on this show, the things that kids are taught and told in the curriculum and, school nurses, all the crazy things that happen in school. But resources from Focus on the Family focused on supporting students with grace, truth, and a biblical worldview. It's a free PDF available for you. Download it at klyt.fm in the Action Center. And in studio with us, Paul Gessing is here, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org. Paul, thanks for pretty much on a monthly basis sharing with us and bringing us up to speed on issues related to liberty and the freedom that they'll find not only at riograndefoundation.org, but Errors of Enchantment. We're going to walk through some of the recent postings you've put there. Actually, let's just jump right into it because typically get a full hour, and we want to get through as much of this as we can. An article at errorsofenchantment.org headlined, RGF notches two big local policy wins in the ABQ Metro this week. So kudos to the Rio Grande Foundation. Let's start with something positive.
Absolutely. So this was a few weeks ago, but these were definitely two big victories as far as I'm concerned for sanity, for reasonable government. We've talked about Brooke Besson, city councilor here in Albuquerque. We've talked about her push for funding for the swimming pool at North Domingo Baca Center, the massive cost overruns from an original cost of $17 million to $100 million, and her effort to raise the gross receipts tax. Long story short, we pushed back against that. We pushed it in March, defeated it again in June. And the first one would have been straight up increase the tax. The second would have been put it on the ballot this November. There was an attempt at a third time around. Instead, it's getting towards football season. So Brooke Besson handed it off to Clarissa Pena, the president of the city council. She introduced the same basic package with the same basic purpose. And city council just said, no, we've already done this. We've been down this path. Even though this is the president of the city council, they rejected it. They didn't even let her introduce the bill. So blessed be, we will not have a tax increase on the gross receipts locally here on the ballot in November. That was a huge victory, and we're thrilled with that one. The second one is at County Commission, and a commissioner named Eric Olivas. He is in the East Mountains, kind of northeastern heights sort of area of Bernalillo County Commission. He had been pushing, considering an idea to put public financing of candidate elections for Bernalillo County on the ballot in November. We were pushing back against that, saying, look, Albuquerque is a perfect example of a failed system where Tim Keller, the incumbent, gets over $1 million. All the other mayoral candidates get zero. And of course, it helps the incumbent go to victory. He and the county are going to study this issue. It's not going to be on the ballot. So I await the results of that particular study, but the upshot, the good news, is that this will not be on the ballot this fall.
Yeah, when it comes to elections, if someone who you'd prefer to see elected maybe doesn't have, they're the ones that got no assistance financially, like the $1 million you mentioned Paul. You know, your prayers are coveted in every election. And a reminder that now it does help when you have more money in the budget leading up to an election. But the truth is, there's plenty of people who get lots of money for elections, and it's not well spent. And you can pray that the wisdom would be had by those that you're looking to elect, that whatever they get would be, you know, would be fruitful having an impact. So just a quick thought there. I don't want to discount the fact that, yeah, not really even playing field, but the truth is we have, you know, if you are looking to get someone elected who lines more closely up with the biblical worldview that you want to see, and you're praying for that, you're on the side of God in you know, wanting policies and things that line up more with a biblical worldview. Just little thought there to chew on. But hey, let's get back into it. Another look at an article, Paul, from Errors of Enchantment. Paying legislature isn't a bad idea, but the ballot measure this fall is. And this is something I think you and I have talked about. I know Carla Sontag's been on the show to talk about it. Not only about paying those that are in the legislature, but, you know, compared to other mm-hmm. places around the country, well, you'll be able to speak to this more than me. When I saw the chart previously, it's like, wow. This is something that the those that are registered to vote really should be well up to speed on.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward here. Currently, New Mexico's legislature is considered to be unpaid, and that is debatable whether that's the ideal way to do things. I am not against the Rio Grande Foundation, not against paying legislators, but where I think this is a problem is that we're not reconsidering the entire approach. They're going to, this amendment, if adopted in November, and now that those city and county ballot measures are out of the way, we get to focus our full attention on this issue. But 67,000 approximately, that is what we're looking at in terms of paying them annually, on top of per diem, which is a couple $100 a day, plus travel expenses, mileage, and the like, plus a very generous pension program. So, yeah, when you factor in all of those and the fact that there would be no change to the existing system, you know, you're wondering what we're getting for your money as a taxpayer paying the legislature on top of these other generous benefits. And that, to me, is the major, major issue here. It's that we should get something as taxpayers. I think foregoing the pension, which I don't like pensions as a general rule, especially for legislators. These are professionals. These are people who can and should be saving their money for the future. Otherwise, we could implement something like term limits. But we don't need to just add a very generous, the most generous pay in the region on top of everything that they are getting now. So I think back to the drawing board is how I would like to portray this, saying this is not the solution on the ballot this fall.
Yeah, and just layperson listening to you, Paul, we're here, no, you know, paying isn't necessarily the wrong move, but within reason is crucial.
Exactly. Yeah, when you're being paid $15,000 or so for essentially equivalent work in the state of Texas, and Colorado's closer to 45, Arizona's very low as well, like $20,000. It is insane to be paying our legislators this money. And I personally, I would also like to see maybe a pay for performance.
Love that.
If we were to get better outcomes in New Mexico on some of the issues we care about, like education being not 50th, and economic growth, and some of these other things like our poverty measure being raised up. I'm not sure if that could work or would work, but I just don't think paying the legislators this salary, this amount of money, is something that is going to improve governance in the state of New Mexico, and it's not a worthwhile expenditure.
Okay, now, if we're not spending $67,000 plus all the benefits now, Paul, and they did go to those amounts and they made this happen, which coffers would that come out of? Is this...
To my knowledge, it would be out of the general fund, basically the annual money that is spent. Perhaps they could tie it to the permanent funds, but my expectation is it would be related to, they have a bill every year in the legislature. It's the first bill covered and passed almost every single session because it pays the expenses of the session. Well, this would just get rolled into that, what they call the feed bill, to pay for the costs of the session and therefore pay the legislature for the work that they're doing.
Yeah. Now, all of us clearly have legislators individually that we feel are doing great work in the legislature, but as a team, they're underperforming. As far as the things we talk about regularly on this show with you and with others about, how New Mexico is not performing well here and the top of this list that we don't want to be on the top of.
If we were a football team, we would not be giving the coach a pay raise.
That's right.
We would be looking at new hires to consider for that job. You got it.
Yeah, and if you're prepared to pony up the salary for at that level, what many would consider unreasonable, a team in the NFL, how about you performing so bad? How about you take, if you've got that kind of money that is, and you're in the midst of a time where the population of New Mexico is feeling the financial pinch and you've got that money to throw, well, how about throwing some towards the people that are suffering because of the decisions being made? That seems like a simple...
Well, we've talked about that, rebates on our tax dollars. Obviously, the governor, as we have discussed, the governor has talked about that. But since the last time you and I convened, really haven't heard a lot from the governor about returning our tax dollars to, the people of New Mexico. And at that time, $850 million was what we were talking about. If you filled up recently, as I have, Steve, you and your listeners may be aware that the price of gasoline has not come down. In fact, it is still quite high, which to me means that the state of New Mexico is sitting on even more money than $850 million. I've said closer to $1 billion. It's probably even in excess of that by this point in time. And yeah, we should be returning that money and much more to the taxpayers of New Mexico.
All right. If you just tuned in, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation is with us, Paul Gessing, for the remainder of the hour. RioGrandeFoundation.org and content from errorsofenchantment.com. We are going to take a quick break and come back with more right after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, thanks for joining us daily, 1 o'clock on ABQ Connect. Tomorrow, a lot of your favorite segments, including an update from the Daily Citizen at Focus on the Family. We'll also hear from the Heritage Foundation and content from DailySignal.com. Our Friday financial update with Brian Cochran. I happen to know Brian and I will be discussing teaching generosity to our kids. And there's a marriage enrichment event coming to Calvary Church Albuquerque for the whole community, and you are invited to attend. We'll be visiting with the organizers of that event to kick off tomorrow's show. So make sure you're with us tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And remember to find archives of this show at abqconnect.online. Paul Gessing in studio. He's the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. And we're walking through some content that he's prepared at errorsofenchantment.com. Paul, the next thing we want to touch on, headline, there are two big problems with Democrats' early primary push. What's going on?
Yeah, a lot of election-related news here, and this one has been very well publicized, including, I want to say, front page of today's paper, but there's been a lot of talk about this, and the idea is that the Democratic Party in New Mexico would like to move New Mexico's primary forward on the calendar. Anybody who's a politics junkie knows that you have various primary dates from the various states. Typically, the Republicans and Democrats, while they don't work together a lot, they do share primary dates, partially just to save the cost. And the cost of a primary election is $15 million, or any statewide election, I should say. But the cost of this particular decision would be an additional $15 million to move the primary for the Democrats in the presidential cycles from June to February. So who pays the $15 million? That is a very important question, because this is just the Democrats making a decision to be more relevant in a national election cycle, because the earlier bird gets the worm, so to speak. The early primaries votes are more relevant in those races. By the time June comes around, typically the decision's already been made, and you're just voting, and it's no big deal. So I get the idea. I get the impetus for why the Democrats are trying to move their primary forward. So the first problem, as I just explained, is the $15 million cost and who pays for it. This will have to pass through the legislature, by the way. So who is elected governor could determine where the money comes from. I expect that Deb Haaland will all too happily say, yeah, taxpayers, we're going to stick it on your backs. Although we haven't gotten a specific explanation from her. Now, the other one, the other problem, is that New Mexico just this past June, we all remember, we just went through it, had our very first ever semi-open primary election. So that meant that for those of us who elect to be independent in a primary and vote, we could show up on the election day or, you know, early voting and request the ballot of our choice. We were not tied to Republican or Democrat.
Is there something you needed to do before you went to vote, or you just show up? I'm an independent, and I want a ballot for one of the two parties.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's all you had to do.
I love that, actually.
I am fine with it. Yeah. I mean, I thought that was a reasonable approach to bring those independents and to give them a chance to vote in the primaries. Well, if you have what amounts to two Democratic primaries, and the Republicans are not able to move. Because remember, right now, this fall, we're going to be seeing statewide elections for governor, or for secretary of state, for attorney general, treasurer. This is a presidential year we're talking about.
Yeah.
That will mean the entire 112 members of the legislature will be up. Well, legislators can't raise money in a legislative session. February 15th is smack dab in the middle of the 30-day session. How does that work for those legislative candidates? You can't fundraise. You can't campaign. You're in session working. I don't think the party's going to switch all of their primaries. So you're going to have two primaries plus the Republicans. So if you're a declined to state and independent, and then you vote on the Democratic side in February, can you come back and vote again in the Republican primary? I don't think that makes sense. If you're voting in one, do you have to just, are you labeled then next time around, I have to vote in the Democratic primary? Who's keeping track of all this? This is going to be a huge undertaking of record keeping. And quite frankly, I don't know that we're equipped to do this in the state Secretary of State's office or the state of New Mexico. So how we deal with the semi-open primary law, and whether we're already essentially defanging this this law right now with the potential shift of the Democratic Party's primary, is a real question. don't think it's being answered yet.
I want to say something. Paul, this is one of the reasons I really love to have you on the show, because I wasn't paying attention. I heard about this, and I didn't really ever know that you could have a the Republican and Democrat primaries separate dates. This is new to me, probably because I wasn't paying attention. But I'll tell you, and we probably had this conversation in the last presidential election, on or off the air. But in New Mexico, I'm always frustrated at, by the time the primary comes, there is that frustration.
Sure.
But I participate, and I do wish it was earlier. Mm-hmm. But, hearing from you and knowing that they can separate them, I'm not interested in that. If they're together, that's something I would be ready to support. And actually, I did the math, correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as raising taxes, never like to hear about taxes being, to pay for this to move. And I did the math. I mean, if we were moving it together, I think it would cost each taxpayer in New Mexico, I just did the population, $2.5 million, about $6. And I would pay for that. I'd be happy to pay to have an earlier primary if they are together. But thank you, Paul, for the education.
Well,
because
the beauty of that would be if they moved it all together, they wouldn't. There would be no extra election because it's the price of paying for all the machines and the poll workers and all that stuff. Yeah. The challenge is, it's part of like being in a club. The Democrat and Republican parties, they are in many ways like a club. And to get pushed forward in the primary process, I guess the National Democratic Party said, well, here's the dates we have, or here's a date that you're going to get. And that date happens to be February 15th. If we were having this discussion and the Democrats were looking at mid to late March, remember, this is the 30-day session time, because this is an even year and our sessions are always 30 days in even years. So the session will be over. Now, if you did it in late March, then you have a month more. It's still a hassle for these legislators, especially Democrats, but for these legislators to raise money and or put that all on hold for a month while they're in the legislative session. But this is a real problem and a conundrum that I don't know how they're going to address it.
I like a level playing field. If it was reversed and the Republicans were trying to do the same thing, I'd still say I'd prefer to have one primary for both parties and earlier. Now, before we go to a break, Paul, practically speaking for the listener, other than being educated on what's trying to happen, what's the call to action?
Well, the call to action is that this will be legislation introduced in the 2027 legislative session. So come mid-January, which seems a long way off, but isn't at this point.
No.
There will be bills on this issue. And obviously, you could also frame your choices for governor based on, I think it's safe to say that Greg Hull is skeptical of this, certainly from the taxpayer perspective. Deb Haaland doesn't seem to have a position, but she, I think, is likely to go ahead with it. So there's that in the fall, in November, and then there's the legislation that'll hit in January. And I do think it is a moral case. It is a politically powerful issue to say, no, the taxpayers in New Mexico should not be on the hook for a second primary just so one party can move forward. Now, the Republicans, I talk about club, they would have to petition their club, the National Republican Party, for the ability to move forward. And they have so far shown no sign of doing that. If the Democrats pass this legislation and fund it all, I think the impetus for the Republicans to try gets increased, but will that happen or not? It's anybody's guess.
Okay, so how you feel about it after hearing the facts, the encouragement would be for you to communicate with your representative in the legislature and let them know what your feelings are on it, and hopefully they'll listen. But with that in mind, with November coming up, I do want to remind people that if you aren't registered to vote, strongly encourage you to be registered, be informed. And part of being informed is visiting sites like the Rio Grande Foundation, Errors of Enchantment, and Tipping Point, New Mexico, all places where you can get information from the Rio Grande Foundation and Paul Gessing. So, hey, we have more to talk about. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more right after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, I'm a little convicted. You know, in that last segment, I was saying, man, Paul, this is why I love having you here. I didn't know that. I didn't know that because I didn't spend time like I maybe should being, you know, I kind of hear a story and I only kind of half listen. Slow down a little bit and consume when you hear these stories. You know, whether they're at the other places we've mentioned, like the Daily Signal or Focus on the Family's news outlet, or Rio Grande Foundation's errorsofenchantment.com or Tipping Point New Mexico, the podcast. Take some time, walk through some of this such important content that we walk through monthly with Paul. Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio with us. Paul, let's talk more about education. We've done it a little bit, just a little bit, on this show with you each month. And on Errors of Enchantment, you wrote an article, How Could New Mexicans Benefit from the Federal Education Tax Credit, and How Can You Help? More education for us.
Yeah, this is the big, beautiful bill that passed in Congress back in May of 2025, has a school choice tax credit at the federal level, $1,700, that could be taken by a taxpayer, including myself or yourself, and donated to a tax credit organization that then provides scholarships to children who are eligible for this program for the schooling they want, not that the government provides for them. New data from the American Federation for Children, which is an advocacy group that we work with, basically they came out with state-by-state talking points. $38.2 million could be provided in scholarships if 10% of taxpayers with a $1,700 liability participated in this program. Now, New Mexico has so far not signed on. It's also been a point of frustration with myself that the governor says she, and I get it, the governor says she's waiting for the Trump administration to hand down regulations. That's supposed to now happen by September. So my desire, my ask for people, action item, is to go to the governor's website and send her a very short note, an email saying, hey, I would encourage you to sign on for the federal tax credit program so that kids in New Mexico can benefit from, you know, like I said, just 10% participation rate. We're talking $38.2 million. The governor's going to decide by the end of this year whether New Mexico's in or out. And we should be in, especially given our educational outcomes. So check out that information. Go ahead and, very easy, Google Michelle Lujan Grisham, governor. Go to the page where you can contact her and just write a brief note saying something along the lines of, you know, take the federal tax credit for school choice or for education. And that's my ask.
All right. And let's move on. Got a question for you, Paul, related to an article you wrote for the errorsofenchantment.com website. Here's the question. Is Representative Stansberry in the wrong office?
Yes, she is. Pretty simple. She was talking to the Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce recently, and this is kind of both delusional and in the wrong office, if you can believe that. So she says to the chamber, remember, Stansberry, just for the record, is, for most of us, our congresswoman. She is District 1 here in most of Albuquerque and kind of towards the south and east. But she tells the chamber, we have economic development opportunities that happen in New Mexico, but because we haven't invested in our long-term pipeline from pre-K all the way through higher ed for our workforce, we have to look outside of New Mexico for those skilled workers. Now, we and the governor on different levels continue to talk about the fact that she has vastly expanded the size of government, including a taxpayer-funded universal pre-K program, free childcare, massive infusions of cash in a K-12 system, and free college. If that's not good enough for Stansbury, I don't know what she would want. Now, she goes on to talk about economic development in rural communities and the lack of infrastructure. And I say, again, this is a state of New Mexico issue. Yes, federal officials can bring in some tax dollars, but if you're upset and frustrated by the lack of preparedness of our workforce and the lack of infrastructure, that problem is not only not her problem in D.C., it's her compatriots in the Democratic Party's problem right here in New Mexico, who dominate our state, including Governor Lujan Grisham and the legislature being dominated by Democrats. So that's why I say she's both delusional and in the wrong office. Now, this is my game theory take. You ready for this, Steve?
Yeah.
So, you know, I always am trying to think about what these politicians are trying to do. Well, I think this is maybe Stansbury's first foray. You know, she was in the state legislature, but she ran for Congress, not governor. Perhaps she is laying the groundwork for a run for governor in 4 years if Deb Haaland does not win. And if she does win in 8 years, she would be a likely candidate for that office. But, you know, most Democrats, including Deb Haaland, who's running for governor and won't really interact with Trump all that much, want to talk nonstop about Donald Trump and all the bad things and horrible things that he's doing. Then you get a candidate for, you know, somebody who's in Congress and has to deal with Trump all the time. And what does she want to talk about? Yes, she said a lot of things about Trump, but now she goes to the chamber and talks about all these kind of common sense issues and questions, except for we're already doing most of it, and the rest of it is all at the state level anyway. So I really think Americans, and especially even their politicians, the elected officials, need a civics lesson to understand what the role of the state, what the role of the Congress, what the role of the federal government versus the state, the governor, all that is and needs to be. And I don't think Stansbury got civics 101.
Okay, so if civics 101 is confusing, we can just call it stay in your lane.
There you go. That's another way to put it.
Okay. Paul, let's move on to a topic I know dear to both of our hearts, and that is the removal of New Mexico's personal income tax. How does the New Mexico Secretary of Taxation and Revenue feel about that idea?
So in addition to the rebate question, there has been a bit of a discussion in New Mexico political circles, and certainly this is kind of the work of the Rio Grande Foundation, something we're very pleased to be having the conversation about, and we want to continue to keep this discussion going. So in a way, I'm happy that Stephanie Chardon-Clark, she is the Secretary of the Tax and Revenue Department under the current governor. She wrote a recent opinion piece in which she kind of blasted the idea of eliminating the personal income tax. And I boil her talking points down to essentially two. One is, we simply should not cut taxes, especially for the wealthy, and that two, New Mexico can't afford to do bold things to improve its economy and must be content to do smaller policies like very narrowly targeted tax credits. And of course, generally speaking, those are targeted at very low income people, not job creators, not making New Mexico more business friendly. And that's the problem that we've continued to dig ourselves into this hole where people are leaving New Mexico, our young people in particular are leaving. Businesses don't come here. We're reliant on the federal government and the oil and gas industry. And we've had a unique opportunity for really 8 to 10 years to do some big things in New Mexico economic development policy. Not the little, you know, this is a time economically to be thinking about home runs and triples, not bunt singles and squeezing out a run. Now we're back in baseball season, but yeah, I just think with the money that we have flowing in here, and I just mentioned, we're probably sitting on at least $1 billion plus of just unforeseen money that's not even being discussed. It was being considered as rebates or eliminating the personal income tax. You're not going to eliminate the personal income tax right away, but you could essentially cut it in half with $1 billion right away. And then say, if we don't get enough revenue to make this stick in the future, then we go back and rework the situation. But right now, New Mexico's in the midst of a precious opportunity. We shouldn't miss out, but we are so far.
All right. Well, with the time we have left, just a couple minutes, I do, Paul, want to call attention. There was a breakfast this morning many may have missed with the Rio Grande Foundation, but you are supporting a luncheon coming up in early September, September 9th, The Future of the American Right with Reason Magazine's Stephanie Slade. That's going to be at 11:45, and details about that are on the Rio Grande Foundation website at riograndefoundation.org events. Look for information on the events. For those not familiar with Stephanie, Paul, and an event like this, you want to kind of paint the picture with what they'll experience if they participate?
Yeah, I'll throw one other out for you. So Stephanie Slade writes for a very prominent kind of libertarian-leaning magazine called Reason. The idea of fusionism arose during the Reagan administration, where kind of a more libertarian group and the conservative and Republican groups got together on a wide variety of issues, tax, economic. Reagan was a fairly socially moderate person, although, you know, he was definitely pro-life, but he, in a lot of other ways, was pretty moderate. And so is this a going concern, this concept, or is basically the Republican Party leaving behind its more libertarian instincts and going towards big government, state conservatism, buying companies, all that kind of thing? And I think we're certainly moving in that direction. I would only add one more thing, which is Rio Grande Foundation is having another gala for, celebrating the organization October 2nd. All of this information is available at riograndefoundation.org/events. So go there for the luncheon, other events we have, and a gala on October 2nd.
Always appreciate it, Paul. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. Stick around. Jay Sekulow on the way. But thanks for taking the time today to join us on ABQ Connect.